What's up? What's happening? Welcome in. It's the Offense Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Streaming live on YouTube, where you'll notice we're in a slightly different location. Today, I'm at Capital One Arena ahead of the Warriors game tonight in town to take on the Wizards. We will get a late update a little bit later on whether or not Steph Curry is playing tonight. Curry working his way back from injury, but big crowd expected here at Capital One. And actually, that game will be on Bloomberg 99.1 tonight. We are here, but the game will be over on Bloomberg 99.1. Maryland kicking off their season tonight as college basketball gets going. That's coming up. Pre-game coverage at 6:30 here on the Team 980. But it is, of course, a victory Monday. That is the most important thing that we are going to be talking about and how we will spend almost the entirety of our show today, starting with...
It's time to get the breakdown started. One, two, three, three. First up, 10 observations.
Just took it and just boom, put it right on the ground.
It's first and 10. Number one.
The Commanders straight up, flat out, handled their business yesterday. And I mean that in a very literal sense. Not only are they 7-2, first time they've been that since 1996, but that was a very business-like win in general. It was a professional win. The Giants are not good. They are a team that if you got up on them early, Brandon Tierney talked about it with us last week, they would probably roll over and die a little bit. And credit to the Giants, they didn't fully die. Commanders were really stressed. That's not to say there weren't points in the game that were stressful, but realistically, the Commanders were not stressed for basically the entirety of that game. They were able to get out to a lead. They were able to hold that lead. And there was no point in the second half where the Giants had the lead. And that comes down to the absolutely just savage a nearly six-minute drive that ends in a field goal to get them to 27. Giants come down, credit to them, score to make it 27-22, and they never get the ball back. And had they, it would have been because the Commanders decided to score a touchdown and put the game out of reach. Instead, they kneel on the ball three times at the end of the game. This was a business handling type of win, and it is really fun because this is the type of win that you come to expect from this team. And it is the exact opposite of how any of us that have followed this team for the decade now that I have been, basically, or the previous 15 years before I got here, basically going back to the last time this team was a Super Bowl contender under Joe Gibbs. It's been that long. So for many of you listening, your literal entire whole lives, that you could rely on the Commanders to do exactly what they are supposed to do. And they did yesterday, and they deserve credit for that, especially considering they did not have perhaps their most business-like, most reliable player. Number two, please.
Number two.
They ran the ball for nearly 150 yards without Brian Robinson. This run game is legit, and they probably would have pushed... I mean, I don't want to say like, oh, they would have rushed for 200 yards, but it would have been more with Robinson. That's pretty clear. Like some of the McNichols and Eckler carries that didn't go very far, which ultimately is why Chris Rodriguez comes in. And we'll talk about him more as we go here. But why C-Rod had such a big day yesterday, because they found the back that was best. And the guy that was best was the guy that was most like the guy that was missing. And B-Rob is an even better version than Chris Rodriguez, and he's a more versatile guy, so it could have opened up other things in their offense. But even with that said, Rodriguez, 11 carries, 52 yards, 4.7 per carry. And there was a play in this game that I think just perfectly kind of illustrates how nasty this run game is, that the mix of personnel, design, and everything just being maximized. And it came to a point where the run game had stalled a little bit. Commanders got in that huge drive in the fourth quarter. They started actually with 2 1-yard runs. That was it. They were in bad down and distances. They got to a 3rd and 9, and that's when Jaden just fades and fades and fades, then finds Eckler wide open. Eckler chips, gets out. Nobody picks him up. Jaden finds him. It's like a 30-something yard gain. All of a sudden, it's 1st and 10. They run the ball again with Jeremy McNichols. 1 yard gain, 2nd and 9. Yikes, man. We got 2 1-yard carries in a row. What's going on here? How can we open up this run game a little bit? And this play, 2nd and 9, 7:23 to go in the ball game, is the kind of thing that Cliff has in his literal bag. They run an RPO where the pass option is a bubble to Diami, who has been killer in those situations this year. So they run Diami in motion. Eyes are going to him. The corner follows him. Some of the contained players stay outside because the threat is there of that pass option. And then on the run side of it, I got to talk to Logan to see if there's a different name for this. I'm going to call it counter trap, where Andrew Wiley blocks down on the defensive end. So you got to old Vince Lombardi, we got a seal here. And then John Bates fakes towards the defensive end or the outside linebacker, the edge player on that side, and then gets to the second level. So that edge player is like, sick, I'm free. And here comes Sam Cosmi coming around, looping, and smacks the ever-living hell out of this dude. There's your other Lombardi and a seal there. And you got 8 yards for Jeremy McNichols untouched into the second level. We got counter trap, where it's we got a counter one way, Jeremy McNichols faking, coming back. Like, it is a nasty play design. And at a point where the run game had stalled, they just kept trying different stuff. And it's really, really impressive how they continue to do that stuff. Maybe you call it a power trap. I don't know. We got pullers. We got wham players. We got trap players. We got an RPO attached to it. All I know is it got 8 yards, got them to 3rd-and-1. McNichols then picks up the first down, and they continue to march down the field until they get a field goal. And that is the kind of play that this team will make. Cliff does a tremendous job of finding whatever the right thing is, and that actually leads us to the final part of our first half of our 1st-and-10.
Number 3.
Which is the situational football dominance of the Washington Commanders. What a sentence. Oh my God. If you had asked me 3 years ago if I would ever say that phrase, I might say no. Things have changed a little bit. Thank goodness. And I give credit to Dan Quinn in a major way on this, because they practice this stuff. Logan has talked about on Take Command that when he was with Dan in Atlanta, they practiced more situational football than any other stop in his career, including when he was with Kyle Shanahan, including when he was with Mike Shanahan here. Like, real professional coaches who know what they're doing and have been good in those situations on some level historically. Kyle, I know he's got some notable not ideal situational football things, so I'm not going to let that slide. But the point is, DQ practice it more than anyone else. And it shows, because as Dan calls them, the winning time plays, they make them again and again and again. And I think the bigger part of that, or just as big of a part as the players' preparation, is the coaches. I cannot believe Brian Daboll screwed up that end of game situation as badly as he did. As he does. Washington runs the ball, gets 1 yard. It's 2nd-and-9 with like 48 seconds left. Call timeout, Daboll. What are you doing? Like, then Washington's going to run the ball again. You get another stuff. Now it's 3rd-and, even say they get 5 yards. Like, it's 3rd-and-short. They're probably going to run it again, make you use your timeouts. Now you get the ball back above the 2-minute warning, and you still have the 2-minute warning to work with, obviously, as you get back on offense. That's a good situation if you can stop the run. Instead, the Giants let it run all the way down, and Cliff was ready for this. Cliff called a play as if to say, hey, if you're not going to call timeout, we're calling a pass here, because if the ball falls incomplete, the clock stops anyway because of the 2-minute warning. It's a free pass. 42 yards to Olamide Zaccheaus later, bang, bang, bang. Commanders are in field goal range. They're able to run out the clock, kick the field goal, and that pretty much is game over. That was game over. That was when they ran out the clock. That wasn't on the longer field goal drive. So that's excellent. The end of half, where they get the ball back with like 6 minutes left and drive it all the way down and then hit the TD to Terry. Part of the reason that takes so long is because they get penalties and backed up and then have to overcome that, but they do. They're just ready for every situation, and they make winning time plays. And the thoroughness, where they have not really been caught out situationally at all this year. Like, watch the NFL on any given Sunday. Watch every other game and watch how many coaches mess this stuff up. And between Dan, and shout out to Dave Gardy, who they hired out of the league office for in part this specific reason, because he was a master of situations. He helped design some of the rules. And they're like, what if he worked for us? And Josh Harris was like, cool, write the check. Now they're the best situational team, arguably, in the NFL. Good stuff. Good stuff. Love that. Don't waste time, score situations, and the Commanders not only just don't mess them up, they maximize them in this game, while the Giants just absolutely they did a bad job. I'm not going to use any analogies. I'm just going to straight. They were bad. They were very, very bad. All right, when we get back, the back half of our first and 10, including some remarkable numbers about Jaden Daniels and just how well the Commanders' offensive line played yesterday, and a few thoughts on the Commanders' defense and the not-as-bright spots from the game. First and 10, and then we take your calls coming up on a Tell the Truth Monday at the bottom of the hour, 4:30. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980 and always live on the free Odyssey app. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube as well at the Team 980, and we're live from Capital One Arena, where the Wizards will host the Warriors tonight. Dave Johnson joins us 90 minutes from now on set here at Capital One Arena. Then you can hear Dave and Glenn over on Bloomberg 99.1 tonight as we have Maryland Hoops here on the Team 980. Let's keep rolling, though, with our first and 10 observations from the Commanders' 27-22 win over the New York Giants.
Number four.
Jaden Daniels in this game, per Next Gen Stats, completed every deep pass that he threw. There were only three of them, but he was 3 of 3 for 91 yards and a touchdown on passes over 20 yards in the air. Shots are hard to come by in the NFL, especially when you have teams that know we cannot give them up. And so when you get opportunities, you better hit them. And it requires a ton of patience. It requires a lot of, hey, we got it called here. Oh, it's not there. Check it down. Oh, it's not called here. Oh, it's not there. The deep one, but the intermediate is. Let's hit that and get a nice little chunk that way. Oh, there it is. Got to throw it right now. And so you always have to be aggressive in throwing it while also understanding that you can't throw it all the time. And Jaden finds that balance beautifully. And then the hard part is obviously the most difficult part is, can you complete it? The ball's farther away. If I would have told you you have $100, where do you want me to place the target? Would you want it right in front of your face, or would you want it 40 yards away? You probably want it right in front of your face. And so the efficiency that he shows on the deep ball is such a huge factor in this offense, because it also keeps them, the opponent, from overloading the box and allows the success in the run that we just talked about and all that kind of stuff. Overall, just how valuable and how accurate has he been? How above average? Daniels has generated 25.5 expected points added on deep passes this season, third most in the NFL behind Rodgers and Sam Darnold. Dang. That is a massive, massive number. Thanks again to Next Gen Stats for that. And for this.
Number five.
Helps when you have offensive line play that is high quality. How good was the Commanders' offensive line yesterday? Actually, Anthony, I'm going to hit you with a pop quiz. I don't think you're ready for this. That's the nature of a pop quiz, unless you've been looking at the rundown where all my notes are. What percent of the Commanders' what percent of the Commanders' snaps did the Giants blitz on yesterday?
22.
Felt pretty low, right?
Yeah.
What if I told you it was 60?
60%?
According to Next Gen Stats, the Giants defense blitzed on 60% of dropbacks, their highest blitz rate in a game this season yesterday. They generated 5 pressures, 0 sacks on those 25 dropbacks, which is just a 20% pressure rate. All right, so 25 total dropbacks. One, they didn't drop back a ton. Two, they generated 5 pressures on 25 dropbacks. That's 20% despite blitzing 60% of Jaden's dropbacks. Azeez Ojulari finished with 2 pressures on the day, was the Giants' only defender with multiple pressures. He might not be a Giant by the weekend. Dexter Lawrence was held without a pressure on 19 pass rushes. It is the first time this season that Lawrence has been held without a pressure. I am not the world's greatest offensive line expert, Anthony Haney, but I have been covering football for a long time, and I feel very comfortable saying that's pretty good.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how good. So the same O-line, by the way, that had all that success that we talked about running the football also protect Jaden Daniels. And those things go together, right? The protections, the play calls. Cliff did an outstanding job yesterday, and it's a joy to watch their film. It's a joy to watch them play on TV. It's a joy to watch them play in person. It's a joy to watch this offense play. They have consistently just been masterful all season long. They are literally historically great in any number of categories. They're the first team since they started keeping the stats in 1980 to be 11 of 11 during a season on fourth downs. Like, they're every down, every distance, it through the air, on the ground, they're one of the best in football, and they're in Washington with Jaden Daniels and Cliff Kingsbury. What a time to be alive wearing burgundy and gold.
Number six.
With that said, the defense. That is where things get not exactly let's just say they're not historic. They're a heck of a lot better than they were earlier this year, but the Giants' offense totaled 148 yards on 27 designed runs against the Commanders on Sunday. They posted season highs in expected rushing yards, EPA per carry, and total yards before contact on designed runs. Additionally, ball carriers were contacted behind the line of scrimmage on a season low 14.8% of design runs, but they accumulated negative rush yards over expected on those plays. So they were able to get further without making contact, but then you think based off of that, they would have actually gotten further on the plays, so the recovery was good from Washington. That was a lot of numbers. Here's the point. The Giants had a better rushing total yesterday, a better rushing output yesterday than they have against any other team this season. That is not ideal. I also think it was part of the game plan. I also just look at that and say, the Giants know that they are going to have to run the football, that's where Washington is probably weaker. And if you're running the football against Washington instead of throwing the ball to Malik Nabers, and I'm Joe Witt, I'm perfectly fine with that. Okay, cool. I don't think that you can drive 15 plays and not commit a stupid penalty or not lose your patience and pass the ball and take a sack. And you want to know what? They were right. Because I've been watching back the defensive tape, so I have I'm literally doing this play by play because I had a theory on this. It actually wound up being wrong. This was much more about the Giants and their inability to do stuff than it was the Commanders. But you have a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 play drive where the Giants only faced one second down, no third downs. First and 10, second and 6, first and 10, first and 10, first and 10. But on that last first and 10, you don't know what they did? They fumbled. Because Daniel Jones finally dropped back to pass. And then it took them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 plays to score. You know what's not going to happen? The Giants going on a bunch of 16-play drives. So if I'm Joe Witt, I'm like, go ahead. Our offense needs 5 seconds. Or if they want to take 5 minutes, they can do that. It is not ideal, but I do think it was on some level a strategic choice in terms of the aggressiveness to stop the run. And my experiment, my theory was that maybe after that 16-play drive that Joe Witt Jr. changed it up and started running heavier boxes. Nope. For one series, he did. 8 in the box, 8 in the box, 7 in the box. On that, by the way, they did try to put the ball in Daniel Jones' hands more because it was an RPO on the first play, and they forced Jones to throw it. Luvu batted it down. They forced a zone read give on the second play, and then Chin had a pass break up on third down when they had to throw it to Theo Johnson. So there they get 3 and out. They come out in the second half, 6 in the box, 7 in the box, 6 in the box, 7 in the box. There's 8 on the 4th and 1, then back to 7, 7, 7, 7. You get the point. They weren't overloading the box. They were like, fine, if you want to run it, run it. And they couldn't because they're the New York Giants and they're only so good at it. So, yeah, the Giants had arguably their best pass or rushing day of the year based off all those numbers I read you earlier. But it wasn't like it was actually anything that was going to beat Washington. And that's kind of the point.
Number seven.
Because they don't give up explosive plays. And this is the difference in this game versus Chicago and some of the other games. I know they ultimately gave up more points in this game because in that last drive, they did give up chunk plays. And there was a couple, right? Jones had a zone read that went for 24. Like, they gave up a couple, but there's no 50-yarders. There's no long touchdowns in this game. And that actually will feed into number eight as well. But if you just can keep the top on, especially a bad offense, eventually they're going to beat themselves. And if we're being blunt, there's a lot of bad offenses in the NFL. And I don't know, I haven't watched the tape yet. I don't know how good the Steelers are. Like, I don't know if you can do this against the Steelers. You might need to be a little more aggressive in stopping the run because Najee Harris is really good, and then you just hope that Russell Wilson has an off day throwing the deep ball to George Pickens. But, like, most offenses in the 2024 NFL, perfectly fine strategy. That brings us to number eight.
Number eight.
It's pretty clear that this team needs a number one corner long term. You know, I've tried to be a Benjamin St. Juice truthsayer, and people hear what I say and take it to mean that I think Benjamin St. Juice is awesome. Benjamin St. Juice is not awesome. Benjamin St. Juice is frustrating because he's so close to being really good, but I've seen enough of Benjamin St. Juice over the course of his time here in Washington to know he's an average corner, which means when he faces Malik Nabers, there's going to be some problems. With that said, some of the biggest stuff he gave up to Malik Nabers wasn't really on him. There's that deep crossing route that he gave up in the third quarter that it's cover three. He's supposed to be deep into the outside. Now, does a better corner match that better and realize I'm good here and cut hard on that? Probably. Is Bobby Wagner supposed to be underneath that throw as an underneath player? Yes. Yes, he is. The Darius Slayton dig, I think, or curl later in the game. That's actually the one that I'm like, that's the one that kills you. Is he just is too slow recognizing some of these routes. But here's my defense, if you will, of St. Juice and why I think he works in this defense and why they've been able to be so successful. He's not getting beat deep. He is straight up not getting beat deep. He would rather give up a 15-yard comeback route than get beat on a double move, and so he's not overreacting to that stuff, and that does not leave him exposed on the double moves that got him beat against, say, Ja'Marr Chase earlier this year. You can win like that. Not against the best of the best of the best of the best, because they will go and take those 15-yard chunks and march down the field. But against the Giants, fine. If they can get an upgrade by this time tomorrow before the deadline, do it. 1,000% do it. But I think that is the kind of the reality of St. Juice. Is he going to give up more than he should? I would love to see him give up less, but he's going to fight, he's going to compete, and he's not going to give up explosive plays, and you can win like that.
Number nine.
Jeremy Chinn, best game as a Commander. Quinn actually said that at his press conference an hour ago. He thought that was his best game. Dude was everywhere. 13 tackles, 7 solo, 2 tackles for loss, 1 PBU. I really don't understand some of the calls later in the game where I don't understand because I haven't gotten to them on film yet, where they stopped going some of the man-to-man stuff and letting Chinn guard Theo Johnson because he was awesome. And they get some of the zone stuff that there's big holes in. But overall, excellent game from Jeremy Chinn. And one more shout-out at the back end here.
Number 10.
Chris Rodriguez. Talk about staying ready. Everyone can say, oh, I got to stay ready. It's another thing to actually do it, to be involved. And I thought DQ told a really cool story at his presser today that he, being Rodriguez, saw the way that Jeremy McNichols prepared. And he was like, oh, that's what it means to be a backup and stay ready. And he took on that same attitude, persona, preparation, and he was ready for his moment. And there's a chance that he got called up from the practice squad and then wasn't really needed and maybe was going to play on special teams or whatever, but Brian Robinson would have been active. Instead, B-Rob doesn't make it through the pregame warm-up. They decide to go a different direction, and I still don't think that Chris Rodriguez was supposed to be as big a part of that game plan as he was, but he was their best back, so they rode the hot hand. Credit to the staff for doing so. Credit to Anthony Lynn, and then, of course, credit to Chris Rodriguez himself, a guy that has been through, I'm sure, a tough year, didn't anticipate being on the practice squad, but has stayed ready and then came in and did the damn thing. Well done, Chris Rodriguez. All right. That is our first and 10. 10 observations from a 27-22 Commanders win over the Giants. Your turn now on a Tell the Truth Monday. 301-230-0980. We take your calls next on The Hoffman Show. To Tell the Truth Monday on The Hoffman Show, we're on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app. Anthony, do we have, if you could, the introduction for this segment? It is Tell the Truth Monday here on The Hoffman Show, which means it's time for this.
Tell the Truth Monday on The Hoffman Show.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
Call us now at 301-230-0980 to tell the truth about the Commanders.
You can't handle the truth!
Or hit the comment section at the Team 980 on YouTube.
All right, I'll be checking the comment sections as we are streaming live on YouTube, but let's get to the phones at 301-230-0980. It is a Tell the Truth Monday. So let's get to it, shall we? 301-230-0980, starting with Vic in Akakik. Vic, what's up, dude?
What's up, Craig? Craig, I'm going to do this disclaimer before I get going. We may disagree. When I get off the phone, you may say that was dumb, but I'm going to say it for you just in case you do. I will say that this time I agree with about 98% of what you said. I can't even say I disagree with the 2%. This may have a different thought process on it. And what I'm telling the truth about is how we keep getting out leveraged at times in situational football where we shouldn't, particularly on some of the RPO stuff. It bothers me because on about the second series, we played RPO well. It was a cover three. I think Jeremy Chin was a flat player. He hits their receiver behind the sticks, and we get off the field on third down. Later in the first half, there's an RPO where Daniel Jones gets about 12 yards. We don't set the edge. We get out flanked just like we did in the Bears game. And in those situations, like you said, it's versus the Giants, but versus better teams. This is why I'm not sure yet if we can win a playoff game. Get to the playoffs, yes, but win a playoff game, I don't know. And I'll close with this. I laud the offensive coaches, the attention to detail, the accountability, the creativity, the step on the gas approach that we've seen in their performance. But I have questions about Joe Witt and what he's willing to live with as opposed to what we have on defense and what we had last year. There are too many times where we're in cover three and our linebackers don't sink to help Benjamin St. Juice. And we both agree Benjamin St. Juice is an average cornerback. But we don't sink into coverage to make those windows tighter. There were a couple of times where Bobby Wagner could have done that, a couple of times where Frankie Louvu could have done it.
Okay, Vic, I'm going to stop you there to ask you a question. How is that on Joe Witt, and how is that him settling?
Okay, I'm glad you asked. I'm glad you said that. Now, the accountability and the repetition and the attention to detail in drills and team and
how many practices have you been to?
I haven't been to any, but I play college.
Okay, Vic, this is why I hate your calls. I'm just going to be honest. This is why I hate Anthony. Can you mute him for a second? Because he's just going to keep talking over me, and I hate that too. This is why I hate your calls. You actually do know football. Your application of that knowledge is nonsensical. You are not at practice. And yes, there are times in this game where they're in cover three, for instance, and the linebackers do need to drop. But maybe they're not because they've been coached to be more aggressive towards the run fits, and they're willing to make Daniel Jones make difficult throws. Once he proves you can do them, you mix it up a little bit. But the idea that Joe Witt is accepting of this, when literally every week at the podium he gets up, no matter how well they play, and says, I'm not satisfied, I want better, that the trajectory of this defense has been up the entire year, just completely diminishes and derails your argument. Like, that's the thing I don't understand, is it's one thing to be like, hey, I want to see this cleaned up and it needs to be cleaned up. And I'll even give you, that's not good enough to beat a playoff team. That if you do that stuff against the Detroit Lions, you're going to lose 38-7 or 38-28 because your offense is good enough to put up 28 points, but you ain't going to stop them. And that's what happened against Baltimore, where you lost 30-23. But the idea that it is these motivational, psychological things, when that is just completely not the case based off every piece of available evidence, is where you absolutely lose me, sounding like a tough guy on the radio who knows way more than Joe Witt about football.
So look, can I respond? Can I respond now?
Yes.
I don't think you missed. What you said from a football standpoint, and then why you disagree with me, it makes sense. I respect what you're saying, Craig. But what I'm saying is, I'm not trying to sound like a tough guy, and I'm not trying to sound like I know more than Joe Witt. I understand the perception of how it sounds, but I understand what I'm saying is the repetition and terminology and accountability to making sure these mistakes don't continue happening is what baffles me, because Bobby Wagner is a Hall of Fame linebacker. And not
who's past his prime in coverage. Like, it's a reality.
But you said something else that was key. You said because at times we want to make a better run fit or have eyes to a better run fit that may put us in a situation where there's holes between our safeties to our linebackers. But if we're in a 4-3 like we were in the fourth quarter, and we're in a set that covers all of the field or most of the field and gives our defense more of a chance to cover what we could take away or what they want to exploit, then it gives our chance for our outside linebackers to read, guard, to tackle, and see the down block and step towards it and play and sit behind the defensive end and allows Bobby Wagner to sneak in the hole and take away that window. That's my point.
What you seem to be missing is that the other guys
– Let's sit in the field room, Greg. Stop
yelling. Please, for the love of everyone's eardrums, stop yelling. You don't get any more right by yelling louder. You just sound like a bigger goofball. The other guys get paid too. This is professional football. You're not going to win every snap. You have to win way more snaps than the other team. And by the way, that's on offense. On defense, you actually don't have to. Because if you can win one snap decisively within a drive and get a sack or a tackle for loss, then your definition of success, it's a pretty low bar, actually. If you get a sack for 5 yards on first down and second and 15, you can give up six, or now it's second and 15, you can give up 6 yards twice and still get a punt on fourth down. Like, the bar is just not that high. That's the same thing, again, for, like, pass rushers, right? You win three times decisively in a game where you get three sacks. That's the game of your career. You could play 75. You're probably not going to play 75 snaps as a defensive lineman, but the O-line that you beat might. They run 75 plays, 60 plays even. You win 57 of them. Three times you get your quarterback sacked. One of those is a sack fumble. Bad day at the office. Sports radio is not very happy on Monday. That kind of sucks. So at some point, you just have to give credence to the fact that the other guys get paid too. And the better those guys are is going to impact whether you win or whether you lose. When the Detroit Lions, you're probably going to give up 35 points playing like they played yesterday on some of that those specific plays. But also, the strategy would be different because you're playing the New York Giants yesterday, and they stink. So, yes, there is some truth to what you are saying on a Tell the Truth Monday of, hey, this has got to be better against the best teams. I also think the strategy would be different, and whatever you said about down blocks isn't the answer when we're talking about coverage. That's not what we're talking about here. 301-230-0980 is the phone number. More of your calls that will probably sound very different than Vic's next on the Hoffman Show. It's the Hoffman Show. We are on the Team 980 and always live on the Odyssey app. The free Odyssey app, by the way. It's still free. Didn't change it just because I didn't say it one time. Just want to make sure I say it the way the bosses want. It's the free Odyssey app. And coming up, another great host that you can hear on the free Odyssey app, our pal Michael Phillips from 910 The Fan in Richmond joins us at 5 o'clock. But now more of your calls at 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980. That is the Team 980 listener line where we find Doug in Richmond. Doug, thanks for calling. You are on the Hoffman Show on this Tell the Truth Monday.
Hey, Craig. Appreciate you for having me. I was really pleased with that game because I know the divisional games, you're not going to always have a dominant win like you wanted or like we fans initially wanted, but it was cool to see that they were in control. And with Brian Robinson out, I was encouraged that Cliff was staying with the run because, like, with Baltimore, he wasn't as adamant with staying on the run, with focusing on running more. And I'm glad that they gave Chris Rodriguez some run because that Baltimore game, he didn't get any reps, which I was surprised by, which that was really encouraging. And I sympathize with you, man, on the St. Juice. Like, I know you were kind of vouching for him. Like, I understand the frustration. Like, I see the frustration with fans, and I'm frustrated with him too. But they need to go out and get a number one corner, because especially if you want to contend with the Eagles of the world who have two dominant receivers, we can't have St. Juice giving up chunks like that, even though he doesn't get beat deep too much. Or you get a premier edge rusher or add depth to the edge rushing room to help supplement the corners. But Yeah, that's all I got to say. Appreciate you having
me. Yeah, great call, Doug. Thank you. I will say this on the idea of St. Juice against the Eagles specifically. A lot of teams haven't tried Benjamin deep. Like, when was the last time someone really threw a deep ball down the field on him, post some of the Jamar Chase and all that stuff? Eagles don't really have a lot of plays in their playbook. Like, they get one-on-ones, and Jalen is throwing them, especially if A.J. Brown is healthy. He obviously left the game kind of bizarrely yesterday, and they are a totally different team without him. That second half offensively, they did not have nearly the production they did in the first half when Brown was in the game. But, like, if he's out there, they're going to throw a one-on-one on A.J. Brown to Benjamin St. Juice when these two teams play coming up not that long from right now. So I think it is worth pointing out that, like, Benjamin has done a good job and Joe has done a good job of keeping him out of those big situations, but there also haven't been a lot of teams that have really tried him, and I'm not stupid enough to think, or naive enough to think, whatever word you want to use, to think that if it's a 50-50 ball, quote-unquote, between St. Juice and A.J. Brown, that that's truly a 50-50 ball based off any kind of history with those two players. And so, specific to the Eagles, yeah, I would like to see a number one corner. The problem is, number one corners don't really grow on trees, and number one corners that are available and have contracts worth trading for, those also don't grow on trees. And so, I just don't know what the market is. Like, Denzel Ward getting hurt again really stinks. That was the guy that you circle and you go, that dude is competitive. That dude plays multiple schemes well. But now he's out with his sixth concussion. I don't want to trade for a guy multi-years left on his contract who just sustained his sixth concussion. And so Marshawn Lattimore, I just don't know enough about him as a dude, whether or not he fits the culture here. The good news is, like, he was at Ohio State with Terry and Noah Brown, so I'm sure that Adam might call Terry up to the office, and frankly Noah, who I think they have a lot of respect for, up to the office and be like, if this dude comes in our locker room, what's it going to be like? Because he is a big personality, that much we know. He and Mike Evans, thank God they already played the Bucks this year, because he and Mike Evans want to have a brouhaha every time they play. But, like, could he be the guy? Yeah, absolutely could be. Based off his skill level, I just haven't studied him enough to know if that skill is best applied in man situations, zone situations, what he's like in a locker room, all that kind of stuff. Because the last thing you want is to just get a name, right? William Jackson III was a good corner in Cincinnati. How'd that go here? Best name on the market. Not so much when you put him in a scheme that doesn't fit his skill set. Not so much when you ask him to do stuff he's not good at. So I'm not, this is not some, like, mea culpa or whatever, saying like, hey, Benjamin St. Juice, he's actually fine, number one, everything's great, you don't need to trade for a guy, it's just you don't want to trade for the wrong guy. And I don't know how many right guys are available between now and tomorrow, but the trades have started, so we'll see. 301-230-0980, it's a Tell the Truth Monday. Let's go to Billy in Miami. Billy, what's up?
Hey, Craig, that was fast. I've actually been trying to call for about a month now on Victory Monday. As a new season ticket holder, I told you before, we are already winners. My favorite moment each week, Craig, has been calling my friends, who I'm giving my club tickets to since I'm in Miami. I call them every Sunday pregame and get excited with them about the new culture owner experience, and I walk them through every single factor of what they need to do to have the perfect game experience. And every week, whether it's a Hail Mary, Dale Green, beating the Giants two times, the Commanders, Washington, does not disappoint. So my truth I'm telling is that this is a winning season, and we should follow the owner, GM, and coach's lead that we take each game week by week and continue to build this generational franchise. I'm tired of hearing the commentators, including Doc, poke at everything. I'm tired of hearing each week that we aren't playing anybody good. I'm tired of hearing the next game is a trap game, and I'm tired of hearing asking whether this is a Super Bowl team. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. We might lose to the Steelers, a very good Mike Tomlin team, but we should be happy as fans and as Washingtonians that we are already winners going in the right direction. So that's my truth, Craig.
Hey, Billy, I think you probably echo the feelings of a lot of fans. A lot of people who waited a long time and are willing to wait a little bit longer to get it right and just feel good about the direction of the franchise. So thanks for the call. as always. Let's see if there's anybody in the live chat real quick as we wrap up here on a Tell the Truth Monday. Let's see. We got, I thought this was good, from Alicia Fisher, was talking about some of the matchup stuff with Washington in this game and the strategy, as we were talking about earlier, when it comes to the way this team is playing certain teams in the fronts and the personnel matching and all this kind of stuff. And she goes, some people don't understand that in this game, the Giants are playing a lot of 12 and 13 personnel on the line. And the Commanders, from a schematic standpoint and strategy standpoint, said, okay, go ahead. It's 100% correct. I decided to this week track, because I was doing the experiment I mentioned in First and 10, where I'm basically like, hey, did the Commanders all of a sudden decide to stop the run at some point in this game, or did it just kind of happen where they got way better as the game went? Because remember, they gave up 115 rush yards in the first quarter, and they only gave up like 40 or something after that. And it really wasn't any dramatic schematic shift. Like, they played nickel, or their three safety nickel package, their big nickel, their buffalo, whatever you want to call it, package. Actually, I got to find out what they call that. But their big nickel package for most of the game. And they kept having 6-7 in the box. And the only real time that they put base on the field, Michael Walker was out there for a little bit, was when the Giants basically went to like a goal line personnel in the middle of the field. And they did it a couple times where they were down to one wide receiver. They had three tight ends. And you're like, oh, okay, well, that's a heavy personnel. And so the Commanders matched. And they went three safeties, three linebackers. They'd move Daron Payne out to the edge and have an extra defensive tackle on the field. And the Giants actually used that pretty well. The problem is there's only so much you can do out of that formation. Like, one of Daniel Jones's zone reads that was a big gain, I think it was actually the 24-yarder, was out of that personnel grouping. But, like, what are you going to do? Stay in 13 personnel the entire game? No. So it's almost like a trick play in a way. There's just so many times you can run it because, like, okay, well, now we know, and now we're gonna cover things up a little differently. We're going to call a different play defensively. So Washington really did invite the run to an extent, and the Giants are not a good running team. And so although they've been better in recent weeks with Tyrone Tracy, they were just counting on the fact that Washington or that New York was only going to be so successful. They were correct, and ultimately they win the game. 301-230-0980. Store that number in your phone. That way, next time you can get in before the segment's over because, well, we're done taking calls for right now. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Michael Phillips joins us. Hey, that's just 4 minutes away here on the Team 980.